Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is August 8th, 2013. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm speaking to you tonight from Connecticut. I came up to New York last weekend to record Eunice Boston and her team for next week's Salieri Report. Then I headed up to Newport, Rhode Island for 2 days of meetings and incredible weather. I'm on a swing through Connecticut. Everywhere I go, restaurants and stores are packed. Along the northeastern seashore, the summer season is in full swing. The sailboats are filling the waters of the Atlantic, and the petunias are gloriously in full blossom. This weekend, I head inland back to Tennessee. Our theme tonight is pension funds in play. You've been watching a tremendous back and forth over state and local pension funds. It really got going as the bailouts began, but it's really beginning to get serious now. It's sort of the chance for the state and local pension funds and the various people who serve them to take their turn in the doghouse. There are lots of angles on it. Part of it is the best defense is a good offense. If you look at the people who engineered the financial coup d'etat, they have a lot of reason to feel defensive vis-a-vis the state and local pension funds, who with their purchases of mortgage securities and treasury securities have certainly suffered a great deal of debasement and financed a lot of shenanigans as interest rates have dropped. And yet, if you know, it's really the pot calling the kettle black. The people who led the financial coup d'etat, the leadership really wants to see a lot more privatization, and they want to break the back of the unions, including the state and local unions. It'll be a lot easier to do privatization if state and local officials are on the defensive, particularly about their retirement benefits. And it's going to make it easier to go forward with various outsourcing and equity vehicles. We saw a proposal this week from Orrin Hatch. The link is up on the blog, basically proposing that the way to save, quote unquote, save the state and local pension funds is to engineer annuities. It's not unlike the annuity plans proposed on 401ks that really got shot down a couple years ago. One of my theories is that if I'm right and there is an expectation of engineering big rises in the equity values, this will pretty much lock in the sort of obligations of the state and local pension funds. So the annuity proposal basically locks in the benefits at the current values. And so if we do see a big increase in equity values from sort of re-engineering North America, the insurance companies will get the benefit. It's the same problem as healthcare. We're loading up on intermediaries, just as I've always said about Obamacare. Americans don't need more healthcare insurance. They need healthcare. Actually, they need health. So, but loading up with more intermediaries is not going to help. To me, this is sort of the targeting of the state and local pension funds. Oh, and let me just mention a great list of the lies about state and local pension funds, which were prepared by some Salieri Report subscribers who are very knowledgeable on this topic, is now up at the top of the blog. And if you're interested in the subject, I really encourage you to take a look at it. The bottom line is if you're a beneficiary in state and local pension funds, I'd be inclined to trust your administrators a lot more than the people who are doing the criticizing at the federal level. The hit on the pension funds to me is part of what I consider to be now the message rolling out from the kind of consensus that probably happened at the Bohemian Grove at the end of July. We're watching the boom being lowered. And I go back to this framework that I keep talking about, and we talked about in the interview with Dr. Farrell. If you haven't listened to it, we've got the transcript up now. It's really excellent. I would encourage you to do it. But we literally have seen the legacy economy during the financial coup d'etat. Approximately, my guess, $40 trillion moved out of the old economy. The liabilities left in the old economy, we've watched, including with the Fed quantitative easing, the fraudulent paper bought up and pulled in both by the Treasury and the central bank. The trail has gone cold. That $40 trillion is now across and safe. We see the sort of article up on the blog, Financial Cleaner Cometh, hitman going to the IRS that's part of the cleanup of really making sure that that trail goes cold. So this money is now across, and you're watching the leadership turn to the legacy systems, and now that the money is pulled out and is very difficult to go back and claw back, what you're seeing is, in the old system, the bringing of financial accountability. So now that we've stolen all your money, we're here to lower the boom and demand financial accountability. And so you're really seeing on multiple fronts this lowering of the boom. And part of that is of course, the retirement benefits, and state and local government is one of the places. Now, there is pushback. Great decision, a very interesting case up on the blog, ruling against Sun Capital brought by union pension funds. It's one of the examples of a private buyout firm going in, taking over a company, re-engineering it, pulling money out. Then the company goes bankrupt. The pension funds left high and dry, not unlike the game that Bain Capital, Mitt Romney's firm, played. And a court ruling that the private equity firm is liable for the pension funds. If the it's a very interesting case because it's also one that unfortunately could be used in the wrong way against a reasonable private equity effort. And it's just another example of how the criminals mess it up for everybody. Okay, money and markets. Let's look at some more issues of lowering the boom. A big one is, now that the pump and dump of the housing market is over, we have the administration, not surprisingly, as we've talked about many times in the Solera report, announcing that they're going to have mortgage finance reform. And what are they going to do? They're going to withdraw the federal credit and taper Freddie and Fannie slowly out of business. The theory, the headline, of course, saying this is going to speed housing recovery. No, it's not. It's going to make it much easier. It's going to shift capital out of the mortgage markets, out of the residential mortgage markets, and much more into the corporate markets. And so this is going to, again, advantage large corporations renting apartments vis-a-vis homeowners buying their own. We've seen over the last 50 or 60 years enormous growth in investment in housing in this country, and it's really a result of three things. One is the mortgage interest deduction. Another is the incredible supply of government guarantees through the FHA, through Freddie and Fannie, through the VA, through the FDIC, through the Federal Home Loan Bank Board, through multiple sources into housing, and then finally inflation. And the combination of those three things have been very much part of building a much higher per square footage per person in America. So houses getting bigger and bigger. If you pull the mortgage credit, and we'll see what happens with the mortgage interest rate deduction, I think it's clearly on the table to get shaved back as part of the deficit reductions. But as you withdraw that, of course, then you unpump the housing market. Given that we have big corporations picking up big inventories planning on doing rentals, it's gonna close the spread between what's attractive, home ownership versus rental. So this is another example of just the financial accountability coming back in, the boom being lowered. We continue to see enormous amounts of investigations and prosecutions at the local level. And one subscriber this week said the message is, if the big boys can do it, but you can't. I also think part of the message is civil money penalties and making sure that the local guys don't cut themselves in for a big share. Part of this hit on state and local governments is in anticipation of place-based equity. And what I mean by that is beginning to finance big urban areas with vehicles that focus just on that area. So as I said last week, Nashville, a group in Nashville announced the creation of an exchange-traded fund that's just investing in companies in Nashville. My expectation is we could also see REITs or venture funds just focused on that place, and it's all part of what I call the trading places theme. One of the keys to that happening is much more literacy about the financial and environmental ecosystems within a place, and looking at places looking at the place-based data in very dynamic ways, which of course the software tools have been allowing us to do now for about two decades. But that really hasn't come out from behind the one-way mirror, we see a very interesting video that I put up on the blog, and I encourage you to watch called Capacity, which is using those tools to describe and discuss what kind of capacity can we handle in downtown Los Angeles. And I, you know, little tools like that to me are another symptom or another sign that we are beginning to move towards this notion of trading places. Of course, in the emerging markets, we've seen the explosion of exchange traded funds that let you invest in a place. So, and of course, the big urban areas in Asia, particularly Singapore and Hong Kong, but that hasn't come to the United States. There was a group that tried it out in the West. I think Oklahoma, Texas didn't catch on. So let's see if it does catch on. Probably the most important news we saw this week, and it's a story that I continue to be very careful about, and that's the news from Fukushima of the continued inability to contain the radioactivity. It continues to pour into the ocean, radioactive water, and impact on the land around. We have one question this week from a subscriber about Fukushima. Let me just read it. We are greatly looking forward to your broadcast this night, this evening. We have a question not directly related to the topic. We would like to understand truly what is going on with the Fukushima nuclear situation. We are in Hawaii. Are Hawaii, the west coast of the United States, and other parts of the U.S. being exposed to radiation? What about the oceans and fish? We continue to read about sustained and even elevated levels of contamination being released in the sea and air. A couple of sites that have daily news are, and there are two that are posted, you can see it on their post on the blog, both of which appear to be grounded and legitimate. Should we be concerned about our children and future grandchildren's health if we remain living on the west coast of the U.S.? Thank you so much. I continue to spend 3 months a year, approximately, on the west coast in the San Francisco area, so this is something I try and look at. One of the reasons that I have never given a firm opinion on this question is that there are very legitimate and reliable sources in our network that take very opposing views on the safety issues here. Some saying that things are very dire, including for the west coast of the United States. Others saying that's not true at all. It's being exaggerated. We did, when we had James Corbett on the Solari Report, we discussed this because he has a website that just covers it. And I think Corbett is a very reliable source of news on this topic. But there are others. And so I continue to believe that this is a very, very important story. And trying to figure out what is happening is something that is, of course, of great importance to me. And I will continue to focus and try and understand, but I do not know the answer. I had breakfast this morning with a very marvelous subscriber. We talked a lot about the fact that the European Union countries continue to move towards détente and in more intensified relationships with both China and Russia and the BRICS. Putin is very masterful in how he's playing this. Of course, we see the president cancel his summit with Putin over the Snowden affair. But Putin tends to be, or continues to be, very, very clever at playing at the heart of the Anglo-American alliance's problem, which is they really don't, particularly after the financial coup d'etat, they're really struggling to find their mandate of heaven, and but relying more and more on force. And so I continue to wonder exactly how this is going to play out, and I don't underestimate the sort of the danger on the geopolitical scene of this loss of mandate of heaven and the Europe moving closer to the BRICS and the Asian countries. The Edward Snowden story continues to still percolate with more revelations coming. As I said last week, great story from The Guardian on the fate of the internet and the balkanization of the internet. And if you haven't read it, I really encourage you to do so, because there are now tremendous issues of sovereignty, both of countries and companies, and greater distrust of the cloud. We posted every week. We have two or three roundup meetings on the Soleri team, and we've started to just quick post little commentaries as we do a roundup. We talk about what the most important events of the week are and the important events of the day, and then inspired by that, we sort of come up with a little commentary. And one of the things I wrote was one called "War Has Many Faces." What I discovered chatting with our team this week is, and last week, is that the progression of warfare from a military war where armies land on somebody else's turf and there's blood and guts and battles, those kinds of wars still happen, but more so war has evolved into the financial world and markets. It was always there, but it's become more intense. And now we're watching that war, of course, spill over into the digital systems, which is what the Snowden story is about. And so we literally see war move out of the physical realm alone into every aspect of life. And so warfare becomes ubiquitous and intimate. And it's an evolution that kind of started at the end of the Cold War and the development of the digital systems. And now it's really interrupting the integrity of the marketplace and the integrity of the digital systems. And of course, the result of that is that a breakdown in trust, and nothing is more deflationary for an economy than a breakdown in trust. And so this is a very important story because we're now all struggling, whether it's our digital systems or our financial systems or our food system, we're all struggling with issues of integrity and who can we trust, more and more happening informally and through networks of trust. On the Fed Watch beat, we have two resignations. Not surprisingly, when the chairman's resignation or when the chairman's term is up and you expect to see turnover at the chairman level, it's not surprising to see other turnover. We have the president of the Cleveland Fed announcing her retirement in 2014. Elizabeth Duke, a governor at the national level, at the federal level, announcing her resignation. Two women leaving. It's almost as though you'd expect Summers was coming in. Summers, of course, got terrible complaints from the women at Harvard when he was there. But I don't expect that to be the reason. I think Yellen is the favorite and will probably end up as the new chairman. So we may just have the first female chairman of the Fed is what I'm expecting. But turnover happening. Very interesting development. Amazon founder Jeff Bezos buys the Washington Post. Actually, the paper is a small piece of the Washington Post corporate entity. Bezos is paying about $250 million to a company that has about a $5 billion market cap. My personal experience with the Washington Post is simply dreadful. My feeling is that I won't bore you with a whole story this time. I've told it before on the Soleri Report. But my personal experience is that it's a paper or a news media of little integrity. What it ran, how it ran, what it buried was all part of playing dirtball politics. So whatever he is, Bezos is a refreshing addition. As Amazon continues to grow and tries to really take over the cloud, it is certainly a very inexpensive way for Bezos to watch his back in the DC lobbying swamp. So I think for him, a very clever and intelligent purchase, and it will be very interesting to see somebody who's very masterful with online systems, what they'll manage to do with the Washington Post. But it shows you how the technology is moving. Precious metals is still looking for a bottom. We haven't found it yet. Stocks about the future is still the dazzling part of the market, with Tesla Motors being today's darling. You know, everybody takes turns being the darling and then being in the doghouse. But Tesla Motors is now up over 400% for the year to date. The world keeps waiting for the U.S. stock market to enjoy summer correction, but it hasn't happened yet. But just about every other asset class is in the doghouse. Bill Gross, after pummeling the bond markets with his comments in the last 2 months, experienced tremendous outflows in his funds, biggest bond fund. He runs the biggest bond fund in the world. And so he decided to finally make some defenses of the bond market this week. Just goes to show you, how his pendulum can swing. Anyway, that'll be the big sort of, everybody's still holding their breath to see what happens with interest rates as well. So let's see what we see coming into the fall. Our hero and our interview and our movie this week is Marcin Jakubowski, who is the founder of Open Source Ecology, and I can't recommend it enough. One of the reasons I had Marcin's speech in 2011 at TED, why I made it our movie this week, is I wanted to make sure that you watched it. It's only 8 minutes long. It's a great quick introduction to what he's doing. Marcin was a physicist who decided that nuclear physics and the kind of physics he studied didn't really have a whole lot of practical applications. He looked around and wanted to make a serious contribution to the world, became a small farmer in rural Missouri, and quickly realized that the economics of small farming, among other things, is you're on a treadmill to buy and make the kind of equipment you need to run a farm. And so he developed a vision, understanding open source technologies as he does. He's also a technologist. He decided to do something called the Global Village Construction Set, which is 50 open source blueprints for the tools, the machines and tools that you need to ensure the success of small farms and communities. It's a very brilliant idea, and I think one that's very important. I think with something like the Global Village Construction Set, particularly if it migrates to things like 3D printers, will be able a community or a farmer or a co-op of farmers will be able to radically reduce the cost of making and managing and maintaining an inventory of the tools and machines they need to really be highly productive. I know Marcin's goal is to really develop the basis by which a community can work 2 hours a day and then enjoy life for the rest, which to me is a very beautiful vision. If you look at place-based economics and the kind of economics we need to migrate through the change we're going on, such a set of open source blueprints, particularly if they were prototyped and developed by a wide network, which is Marcin's vision, is I think could be absolutely wonderful for the human race and in throughout the globe. This is something that could be tremendously useful where I live and tremendously useful in millions of communities around the world. There are many different ways that we each can plug in. Marcin has a group called True Fans. I'm one of them. And a true fan is somebody who donates $10 to $100 a month for 24 months. You can go to his website, become a true fan. They also do online design sprints. So if you have technical expertise to contribute to the building of the blueprints, you can jump on online with Marcin every week or every 2 weeks and participate. It's very interesting. I've done one so far. And then finally, they have local sprints where people come and work on building and designing equipment. The two pieces or the two machines they've gone the furthest with are up to Tractor 6.0 and the brick press is far along too. But there are many different opportunities to plug in both virtually as well as locally or as a donor or just an interested party. So take a look at it. I think it's one of the most inspiring efforts going on, and it's just the kind of thing we need to really make a difference. And again, if you look at what's happening with the maker movement and with 3D printing and other kinds of fabrication technology, I think there is this is an area of explosive. Both explosive economic productivity, but explosive cultural excitement. And there's going to be a lot of great community growing up around these efforts. So check it out. Check out the TED speech and check out the interview was very interesting. We did the interview and got to talking and couldn't stop. So we ended the interview, and then I gave Marcin a little background on my designing of the certain kinds of transactions back in Washington at Hamilton Securities, and then a briefing on the MIT project management system, which I had used at Hamilton Securities, or I use whenever I do a big complex transaction. And he asked me to record it so that he could let his staff hear it. And we have also posted those interviews up on the blog as well. So that's if you're interested in project management systems or the design, you know, open and online, because on the virtual designs, on the design books we did at Hamilton, we would have as many as 200 people coming in online from all sorts of different places. And, you know, so it was a very interesting project management situation. Okay, ask Catherine. Catherine, you said that you believe that food will be replacing oil as the asset backing for the U.S. dollar, and Dr. Farrell suggested that the dollar will be backed by data control. I think that you are both correct. Like in the book of Revelation from the Bible, you shall not buy, sell, or trade. It is as if Mr. Global is taking over the basic needs of each human being on the planet, as described in Maslow's hierarchy. They want control of all our needs to control. We are their human resources. Please comment. The idea of food replacing oil as the asset that is controlled, or the trade is controlled, which therefore backs the U.S. dollar, is where I think the Anglo-American Alliance has been going, which is why this effort by Putin to checkmate the GMO movement, and Europe to checkmate the GMO movement, is so critical, because that's not just about the quality or nature of the food supply. It's also about who controls the reserve currency. And it's also about who's the breadbasket for the world, because Russia is also competing to be breadbasket of the world. So I think that is where the Anglo-American Alliance has been going. I agree with Dr. Farrell that data control is essential to that whole effort, as well as the management of the financial system. We have an unbelievably centralized and levered financial system, and so data control is essential. I'm always quoting Nicholas Negroponte when he was head of the MIT Media Lab, when he said, in a digital age, data about money is worth more than money. And I couldn't agree more. So yes, data control is very important. Do I think that there's an effort to control people? Absolutely. That's a lot of what we talk about on the Solari Report, and I make no bones about it. The single most profitable enterprise in the history of the planet is slavery. And so harvesting people financially is, you know, is simply the next generation. A question about pension funds in the IRS, which I'm going to see if I can't throw to an expert. Then I listened with interest to your first and second interview with Dr. Farrell on the breakaway civilization. In the second interview, a comment was made on the assassination of JFK, as though today people are able to accept that this was a conspiracy and coup d'etat. Oliver Stone made it seem so clear. What about the 9/11 terrorist attacks on the Twin Tower and Pentagon? Have you seen the documentary film 9/11 Mysteries? If not, you can watch it online. Would you be willing to discuss the factual content? Then lots of questions about 9/11, including the fall of the towers. I wrote a great deal about 9/11 right after 9/11. So I think I had the first big story up on the internet on Narco News. It went up right after 9/11. It was called Cui Bono, and it basically was a polite way of saying the official story is full of yaya. I did a lot. I was one of the founders of Unanswered Questions, which is a wonderful website early in the day, and I think did a lot to holding open the sort of collection of research that made it possible to for the architects and engineers to finally gather and do the incredible work that they've done on 9/11. I think it's fair to, if you want to go back, go to the article section in on our website to see all the different things we've written or I've written on 9/11, including a letter to Condoleezza Rice that got me, when she was National Security Council, that got me into all sorts of trouble with the powers that be. I will say, based on their reaction, was a very effective letter. Anyway, the long and the short of it is, I'm clearly on record that the official story is complete hooey. Having said that, exactly what the truth is, you know, who knows? Clearly, the fall of the building was not the result of the airplanes hitting it. It was something else, and you know what it was, I don't know. And I think without the powers of government to prove evidence, it's very difficult to say. But there are lots of theories about what it is, and clearly the official story is hooey. From the same person, I first listened to your observations and perspectives when you were interviewed by Bonnie Faulkner on Guns and Butter, Part 1, 2, and 3. Will there be a Part 4? We have no plans to have a Part 4, but you know, who knows? Then a great comment from a subscriber. Hello, Catherine. Maybe this will put some light on what's going on in the Dallas-Fort Worth and the surrounding area. I quote from you, somebody's building out a major infrastructure. There is a group partnership of private, public, and academic organizations called Vision North Texas. They have put together a very bold and impressive plan that engulfs the 16-county North Texas region. The plan is called North Texas 2050 and can be found on their site. Some of the names of the sponsors will jump right out at you. The game plan North Texas 2050 hides no bones that this 16-county area will be self-sustained and contained. At their 2013 conference, the speaker was Dr. Richard Jackson from UCLA. The theme was designing healthy communities. Then there's a link to visionnorthtexas.org. Maybe, Catherine, you might be able to get someone from this organization on your program. This particular undertaking in North Texas brings to light the flow of capital back and separate systems at work, bringing in the new and leaving the old behind. I hesitate to say this, but I believe it needs to be pointed out. If the map of the simulated reserve and corridor system to protect biodiversity is to be believed and ends up accurately portraying the population geography of the U.S. sometime later in the century, then inside North Texas 2050 will be one of the few places where us humans will be living. Times are definitely changing. Anyway, I will take a look. Another question. Since receiving Social Security checks over 10 years ago, my husband learned that the Social Security Administration recently ran a credit check on him. Can you tell me what purpose or need the Social Security Administration would have to run a credit check? I have no idea, but that's a very interesting question. I'm going to circulate it and see if I can find the answer. Another from a wonderful subscriber. Hello, fellow Solarius subscribers. This is off topic, but I hope someone looking can help me. I'm moving from Minneapolis to Portland, Oregon, and I'm looking for a place close in. It's a tight market, and I'm having a hard time finding a place. You can read the rest of it and get Beth's email address up on the comment section at the Solaria Report. I've sent her an email saying, have you checked out Airbnb? Lots of interesting things I find in places like Portland and Airbnb. Okay, that's it for this week. So in closing, let me just say, coming up, we've got some very interesting Solaria Reports. On August 15th, Coming Clean, Transforming Lives Through the Power of Cleaning with Eunice Boston. I'm going to introduce you to a lovely team of people, Eunice and two of her colleagues, who run one of the most, it's sort of cleaning for the rich and famous. Eunice has done many celebrities and many very important institutions in New York. And she is a remarkable person. Her company, for many decades, did all of my cleaning. She has moved me. She has catered me. She has cleaned and run facilities. But most importantly, she is an incredibly powerful, spiritually powerful woman. And when I tell you the story of her participation in the events of Hamilton Securities, Eunice Boston and the power of her cleaning saved my life. And that's a true story, and we'll tell it on the Solaria Report. August 22nd, Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson will be back, former chief of staff to Colin Powell, very distinguished military career, now teaches national security. Strategic issues facing the U.S. military, warfare in the 21st century. If there's any organization that has is managing an unbelievably complicated, challenging situation, it's the U.S. military, as the finances of this country get ever more dependent on the military. And so I've been looking for a year for someone to really cover all the different issues facing the military. And after going back and forth on these with Colonel Wilkerson, I wrote back and said, you know, there's nobody better. You have to come back. So he'll be back. And then next month, first one coming up in September, we're going to start on crowdfunding. The change in regulations is expected this fall. Crowdfunding is something which I think is not only going to rock the world of everybody listening to this phone call. I think it's going to rock the equity markets globally. That may not mean it'll do it this year, but it's certainly going to get going this year. And it's something, because of the profound impact it's going to have on many people and many lives and on the markets, I think it's something we all need to know about. So we're going to start talking about it in early September. So until next week, August 15th, with Transforming Lives Through the Power of Cleaning with Eunice Boston. Until then, ladies and gentlemen, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Good night and good luck.